All right, so thank you very much to the organizers for giving me the chance to speak at this conference. It's very nice. Let me first also thank Roger, who is my main collaborator in this work. But I also want to thank my physics and machine learning friends, so Gifre, Giacomo, Bogdan, Miles, Esan, Pedro, Peter, Simone, and Juan. So thanks. So initially, I had a more comprehensive introduction into this kind of a flourishing or emerging field. But since Monday, I think we're pretty convinced that this quantum and machine learning intersection is interesting. So I'm going to go straight ahead with phases and phase transitions as my introduction. Then I'll be a bit more precise about what we mean by learning phases of matter. Then I'll describe what our work, which is based on the Ising model and conventional phases of matter. Then I'll move to a more peculiar phases, like those present in the square eyes or in the Ising gauge theory. Those are all classical systems. This is, I don't know why it's there, but it's not in the talk. And conclusions and an outlook, okay? So phases, phase transitions, and the order parameter. So I'll start with a very basic system. It is the Ising ferromagnet in two dimensions, okay? So it's just this classical Hamiltonian is interacting classical spins on the square lattice on the... and the square lattice, and this system has been solved in the by Larsson-Sager, is known to have low temperature phase in which the spins essentially align ferromagnetically either up or down. And as you tune the temperature, or as you increase the temperature, you transition into a paramagnet, so a completely disordered symmetric state. This transition or this ferromagnetic phase is characterized by an order parameter, which is it's just this average over the spins, okay? And the idea is, that it has a finite temperature phase transition TC, which was, I think, computed by Larsson-Sager years ago, and this order parameter is just a measure of the degree of order in the system. So this is all very basic, but I just wanted to go through it very quickly. Now I'm going to tell you what we mean by learning phases of matter. And the inspiration comes from the fluctuations in handwritten digits and supervised learning, okay? So this is... where we took inspiration from. And the idea is that when we write digits, we just do it in a sensible way and we all understand them, but they have a lot of fluctuations, okay? And these are for instance, digits taken from the MNIST. It's a famous data set in machine learning. And as you see, okay, these are all zeros, but they're all very different, but we as humans, it's very clear that there are zeros, right? If we're thinking about numbers, and here we have ones, and they have fluctuations and even different styles. So, for instance, for sevens, some people write them like this, and some people just add one more stick, and so on. But then some people are really bad at writing digits, so this one looks, for instance, like a one, right? So and this is an important problem, but. The machine learning community has developed really powerful ways of reading those digits in a way that a computer can understand them, okay? And this is crucial for applications like, for instance, in your mobile phone, if you read a check in your banking app, so this uses machine learning to know whatever number you've written in the check, and the ATMs also use this type of technology. And the idea is that you write a number, it's bad, and then this neural network technology that is capable of really understanding what the digit really is, okay? And the, if you want the connection with what we thought or the inspiration was that like a crappy or like a ugly five can be understood as a perfect five plus some fluctuations, right? And in a sense, like when we do like with phases of matter, right? Like for instance, we can have a ferromagnetic phase in two dimensions where like, for instance, gray spin, gray color means spin up and white spin down. So in a ferromagnetic, like a perfect ferromagnet, all are up or down. And then you have some fluctuations due to the equilibrium dynamics of the system. Okay, so here I represent the fluctuations and so on. And then at high temperature, well, you will have a lot of them and the system is essentially disordered. So it has zero magnetization, okay? So so that's the inspiration. So the idea that we had or the we thought that we could explore was to like associate those important configurations in a phase of matter and process them through a neural net that will tell me what's the most likely phase they belong to. Right? So that's the idea. So in a configuration like this, where the spins are mostly down, then the neural net should likely tell you that most likely ferromagnetic phase. Okay? And then if they are like a random, like here, they, it should tell me, oh, that looks like a paramagnet. Okay? So that's our strategy and our idea. And we exploited it in a more or less successful way. And we posted the ideas in this paper. If you want to have a look, but let me tell you how we do the training of the neural net. So we collect some data for training and testing, and we do that by Monte Carlo sampling. Okay, so in this case, it's very easy. We've all pretty much have done it before, like Monte Carlo sampling of the Ising model, and the labels come from the knowledge of the critical temperature of the system. So we do Monte Carlo sampling at temperatures below TC and above TC, and then we associate labels to those configurations according to whether they belong to the ferromagnetic phase or to the high temperature paramagnetic phase. And also we did that, we performed Monte Carlo sampling of the Ising model based on this probability distribution with this energy function that I introduced before, the Ising Hamiltonian, and then we generated a big bunch of spin configurations at a low and high temperature, so 20K below TC, 20K above TC, and here is if you want a low dimensional representation of this data that we've collected, it's just based on a technique called TISNI, and it's just, if you want, a dimensionality reduction technique that allows us to have a look at these vectors or these images that we've collected, and I've color them according to the temperature at which they're drawn, okay? So as you see, at low temperature, we have these two blobs. They correspond to images in which you have a big magnetization. So these are, for instance, spins up. These are mostly spins down. And then here is like here are the configurations that are like drawn at a high temperature. So it's just one single big blob of disordered configurations, right? And this like then the spread, if you want, is related to the magnetic susceptibility and so on. And so the idea is that we, like with this training, with this training and this neural net paradigm, what we want to do is to be able to separate like configurations that come at low temperature from those that come or that are drawn at high temperature. And a successful training amounts to finding two functions, so function or high temperature function and a low temperature one in a way that separate those configurations in this high dimensional space or n dimensional space. So these are the functions that we want to obtain, and they correspond to those two labels or those two circles in the neural net. Okay, so that's what we want, and we want those functions intersect approximately around the critical temperature, which is 2.26 for this system in particular. All right. So here are the results for the easing model on the square and triangular lattices. So I'll explain what we've done. So we took a neural net with approximately, I think, 100 units, and then we performed this training, which is just obtaining those functions, right? And then this is, if you want, those functions as average over the test set as function of temperature. As I was trying to explain before, we get those functions which are, for instance, for the low temperature one, is mostly or very close to one at low temperature, and then it crosses over at around TC, and then we have one for the high temperature phase, which is zero at low temperature, and it goes quickly to one. And the crossing happens around TC, as you would expect, and those are the functions that we use for the classifications of the images or this spin configurations. And based on this function, we can get, if you want, the accuracy of the classification of the configuration. So. And we tried a little bit of finite size scaling here, and what we saw is that as we increase the system size, the accuracy improves. Okay, so that's all very nice and interesting, but you may say that we're cheating because we know TC. So what's the point, right? But then because of that, we wanted to try this idea in a slightly less trivial scenario, which is the following. So we performed this sampling training idea on the square lattice, okay? And then what we did was to try to see if the results extend to other Hamiltonians without even to situations where, like, this neural net hasn't even seen an example. And then what we did was to try to plot the output layer of our trained neural net, but based on samples for the triangularizing model, and see if we can get TC in that case. And the idea is that we interpret the crossing of these two functions as like the point in which the neural net is the most confused about what it's seeing, and we, if you want, we interpret that as the critical temperature. What we found is that we can get TC from the triangular lattice easing model within 1% based on the training on the square lattice. So it means that the neural net is learning something which is more fundamental, and it's rather about the phase as opposed to being something particular to the square lattice easing model, okay? And the idea is that we have some analytical understanding for that. So instead of like doing this numerical training, we devised an analytically trained system with only three neurons, and the purpose of each neuron is very clear. So this one would detect when the configurations are mostly polarized up. This one will detect those that are mostly polarized down, and this one would detect either if they're up or zero, meaning unpolarized, okay? And this model is analytically trained, like with our brains somehow, based on perceptrons. And the idea is that they just quantify the magnetization of the configurations, right? So that's the message. And in general, what we found is that this training is more general. So in principle, it can always discover the order parameter of the phase. So we try, for instance, for the antiferromagnetic icing model, and it works. It discovers this stagger magnetization as the order parameter. And here is a slightly more technical understanding of what we found. So this is the investigating the argument of the hidden layer of the neural net during the training. So this is our analytical argument. So it's based on the magnetization, as you may have guessed, or as I said before. And this is before, like, so this is analytic. So we know exactly what numbers to plug in the neural net, and we only have one parameter, and it characterizes all three neurons, as you can see. But this is numerical training. So initially, we initialize those weights in the neural net completely randomly, so you don't see anything as function of the magnetization. But as the training occurs, what we see is that clearly this neural net understood that what you should do is to compute the magnetization because you're getting functions or linear functions of the magnetization in the argument of the neural net, right? So that's one of our main results. So it's really like showing that the neural net figures out this ultimate dimensionality reduction, which is just don't worry about anything else, just have a look at the magnetization, and that should be enough for you to be able to classify the configurations. So that's the main message, just discover the order parameter. So the training discovers the order parameter, and then it uses it to perform the classification. And then that's it for like the magnetically order phases, or like a conventional order phases of matter. Now we move to slightly less trivial phases, like the square eyes, easing gauge theory, which is like harbor like a topological phase of matter. Okay, and these are important because there are important examples in real life, like a fractional quantum Hall effect, and they may have potential applications in topological quantum computing and whatnot. And for the square eyes, these are like highly correlated spin liquids described by electrodynamics, and they're common examples like even water ice and spin ice materials like holmium titanate and dysprosium titanate. So I think it's justified. And the key, if you want, is that the phases of matter at t, even at t equals zero, they do not order. So this ideas that we explored won't apply. So let's see what the neural net does in this case, or like, let's see. So this is, for instance, a 2D high temperature state of those two systems. So we will consider easing square eyes, which is this Hamiltonian here. So it's defined over the vertices of the square lattice, the spins live in the bonds. It has a ground state that is very particular, it's disordered, but it has peculiar power law decay correlations, okay? And we've done for the training and testing, we've done a loop update with single spin flip Monte Carlo, but we also consider easing gauge theory, which is understood as the classical easing gauge theory as in this paper. So it's not the usual Z2 gauge theory, it's just this. Classical model, which is defined on the plaquettes of the system. It's over the products, over the spins, and then you sum over the plaquettes. And the idea, and this is very interesting, is because the easing gauge theory is much harder in that the correlation function, the spin-spin correlation function, even in the ground state, decays exponentially fast, which is the case also at high temperature. So we will see what the neural net does in that case, where like not even the spin-spin correlation function can be used to classify the low temperature and infinite temperature states. Okay, so these are, like as I said, they're interesting because they defy the Landau symmetry breaking classification, but the conclusion is that this neural net can capture the subtle difference at low and high temperature. So for instance, for the square eyes, using the same neural nets that I've shown, so a fully connected, only one hidden layer type of structure can really describe the square eyes or determine, like distinguish states at low and high temperature for the square eyes. But for the easing gauge theory, we won't be like we weren't able to like perform this training, and on the test it was like getting a 50% accuracy, which is equivalent as guessing. Okay, so training fails essentially because 50% is just guessing. Okay, so the neural net is like what? I'm just guessing. And then so how to overcome this issue? And then I had this interactive. Slide, and as you can see, it's very tricky to distinguish between low temperature and high temperature. Okay, so we wanted probably to do the interactive thing. Like, can you guess which is ground state and which is high temperature? So this is for the easing gauge theory. So if you want to take a guess,
the right side is low temperature.
Right. Ground state. Is that the generic opinion. Anyway, so the idea is that this is the ground state, okay? So as you see, like, we can guess, and so we will be as good as the machine, right? Like, as this neural net. So, right. It's very interesting, but the idea is that there are distinctive parity correlations in the plaquettes, but I didn't tell you the plaquettes, like where they lie in this structure, so it's still hard, okay? But if you transform, if you use a slightly more sophisticated neural net, which takes into account the two-dimensional structure of the problem under consideration, then we're back in like a very high accuracy, meaning that we have a successful training. Now we use a convolutional neural net with rectified linear units and a fully connected layer, which has some form of regularization called dropout. And with this, now we're able to classify this high temperature states, which are even hard, like for humans. Or, I mean, of course, if you sit down more carefully, you figure it out, but at least it's very, I don't know, I think it's cool. And so we also derive some analytical understanding in this case. So what does the convolutional neural net use to make predictions in this case? So, and the idea is, or the conclusion, I won't be able to tell you a lot, but the conclusion is that the convolutional neural net relies on the detection of satisfied local constraints to make those predictions, right? So whether the state is drawn at low temperature, you just go and look at the constraints induced by this Hamiltonian. So the idea is that on every plaquette, for you to get a ground state, you have to multiply those four spins, and if the product is one, then you gain a lot of energy. So that's the idea. The neural net essentially, in this case, understands the Hamiltonian. So it's not very fundamental, but it's still interesting. So it's, as I said, like, so for the magnetically ordered phases, the spirit is or like the result is much more interesting because it discovers an order parameter which is not model dependent. In this case, it learns some aspect which is model dependent, but still pretty interesting. So based on that observation, we derive the weights of a streamlined convolutional neural net analytically. So we can, without any training, we can construct a neural net that performs this classification. Now, because we really, really understood what this thing does, we get 100% accuracy, right? So not 99%, it makes a big difference. Not a big difference, it's just 1% difference, but that is equivalent to really understanding, right? Like, as opposed to 99%. These are the weights of this convolutional layer and the output layer. I can tell you more if you want. And the conclusion is that the neural net discovers those local constraints, or ICE rules, if you want, and use them to perform the classification task. So then here is my only, like, a quantum slide. So all I've done so far has been like using classical machine learning to understand classical models, or not even understanding them because we already understand them, but to analyzing them. So this is the only quantum slide of the talk. And the idea is that if you extend this easy engaged theory and you add a transverse term, which is this here, is a product over the vertices, this is the so-called Kitaev-Torek code. And the idea is that the ground state of this Hamiltonian, of this quantum Hamiltonian, is related to the problem we've just solved, or we've just described. And the idea is that one ground state, or like if you want, all ground states can be written as a linear combination over all configurations weighted by the output of the neural net, okay? So, the idea is that neural nets have a power, for ground states, at least in this case, which is simple and it's analytically tractable. the idea, or if you want the conclusion, is that this ground state, which is known to be an equal weight superposition of closed string states, can be written down as a neural net, pretty much like in the same spirit as a PEPS, or like in PEPS, you can do the same thing, and here you can also do it with a neural net. And this is, if you want a non-trivial state, can be written as a neural net, this has like long-range entanglement and so on. So it's very interesting because like it's already pretty non-trivial. So the idea is that this suggests that we should, for instance, try to optimize this type of architectures using variational Monte Carlo for other challenging ground state problems. And something that I've recently found out is that sampling those neural nets is efficient. So they may allow you for studying more complicated ground states where the solution is not known. And then let's exploit this even more. So as this is, I think I like this slide because it's like the interplay between machine learning and condensed matter or statistical mechanics. So for instance, MPS, which is very powerful technique in condensed matter, has been translated into a machine learning algorithm by Miles and David Schwab very recently. There's also this interesting interplay, which is StatMech. And they, in the 80s, they derive, like machine learning community derive like energy-based models, which are very powerful, okay? And now they went back, okay? They took those energy-based models and they're studying ground states and real-time dynamics of many-body systems and even classical systems. So Giacomo is going to talk about that later. And so the idea is that in machine learning, they have derived really powerful algorithms that can't even beat Go. It's incredible, right? So the idea, or like what I'm trying to suggest with this slide is let's exploit this power that they have developed to do ground state calculations or real-time dynamics using this type of architectures. I have just shown one example. You can write down the ground state of the toric code using a neural net. And so let me conclude. So we encode and discriminate phases and phase transitions, both conventional and topological, using neural network technology. And we have an understanding of what the neural nets do in those cases through control analytical models. So they usually, or some people say they're almost like black boxes, well, not in this case because the data sets are pretty well understood. So that's why we were able to have like a somewhat solid understanding of what they do. And as the outlook, we expect an adoption of this type of techniques in condensed matter and the other way around. I'm looking forward to seeing like a variational interpretation of neural nets, and their optimization is clear through like a variational Monte Carlo. And real-time dynamics can be also exploited. We're also trying to attempt circumventing the sign problem. So check Peter Broker's this afternoon, okay? So that's cool, and probably establish a more practical connection between RG and deep learning and turn it into a useful tool, pretty much like what Miles did with DMRG. We have one idea, which is train numerically using quantum Monte Carlo and use this machinery to analyze experimental data, for instance, for phase transitions and quantum gas microscopes and measurement of temperatures, artificial spin eyes and whatnot. Yeah, so. That's it. Thank you.
Hey, I was just wondering if you had looked at the Tisney embedding for the Ising gauge theory, and
yes,
it looks like clusters. Like, I mean,
so Tisney, so. So is this thing, and we tried for the gauge theory, we got only like a one blob, so the Tisney gets all confused, but that doesn't mean that there's no hyperplane separating the configuration. So we found one through the neural net, but Tisney doesn't separate the these two types of configurations.
So I have a question about this a choice of neural network, mm-hmm. because in a sense that you sort of know the physics already, so you chose that it's a convolution neural network for the Ising gauge theory. Mm-hmm. But I wonder if you try this with like more hidden layers, does it work? Or
so let me make a remark. So in principle, you can use this type of architecture to get the Ising gauge theory right. It's just that you need, at least if you want to translate our analytical model, you need a macroscopically large number of hidden units in this neural net. So the problem is the training, okay? That you have a huge number of neurons and the training becomes impractical. But when I faced this problem of the training and we didn't know what to do, then I tried deeper, but it didn't help. The only thing that helped was really in the end doing the convolutions. But in principle, this is enough. So even adding a deeper architecture would be sufficient. But it's just that the training is still pretty tricky.
Okay, so also about the structure of the neural network. Mm-hmm. So you have two neurons at the output layers, right? So why not just choose one, in which case the last neuron could be just a binary classifier? Is that because you chose two neurons at the output that you get, you know, the layers sort of just learn the, you know, order parameter as being the mechanization?
No, you're right. So you can use just one. It's just that I took the same code that I had for 10 digits, and when you have three or more, you can't use one. So I use the same, so it's just a choice.
So why can't you use one?
You can. You're allowed to use one. One should be enough. One output when you have two.
But how about you visualize the weight you learn? Would that still give you, say, mechanization being the best order parameter?
I think so. I think it would just give you the same.
So to get back to your one quantum slide.
One quantum
slide. Yeah. So if one takes the quantum analog to a neural net to be, you know, a deep tensor network, okay? Mm-hmm. The shallowest one would be a matrix product state. And then you could also have a Meira or something like that.
Right.
So if you take a convolutional Meira, so one that's, you know, that's spatially invariant under spatial translation, then this represents a potentially very powerful class of possible quantum convolutional neural nets. But how do you learn this? I mean, so here you actually, because you know this is the Kataev model, you know what the ground states are, right? But suppose you're just given a bunch of quantum states and you want to match a convolutional Meira to these, what would be the procedure for actually learning this?
So for instance, this I have, so I'll give you one example of like not using the simplicity of the ground state, but so as I suggested here, for instance, I have used variational Monte Carlo. So you can, even if the system is large, you can sample using this wave function and you can get the energy and the derivatives of the energy. Okay, and we've checked that, for instance, for this Hamiltonian, which is again is trivial, but if you want, we're agnostic. We don't use the knowledge of the ground state. We've taken this neural net and we've optimized the weights using the energy and the gradients of the energy to do gradient descent, and it works. So this is one way of if you want using. Like for potential usages where like you don't have the knowledge of the exact ground state.
But this works because your Monte Carlo somehow happens to your classical. This is a classical Monte Carlo.
It is classical.
Yeah. So that this works because your classical Monte Carlo happens to work in this case. What about in cases where classical Monte Carlo doesn't do a good job?
Well, in the end, so variational Monte Carlo, which is just a technique to compute expectation values, it looks like classical Monte Carlo in the end. So I think, I mean, if you ignore the problem of getting trapped in local minima, then this should always be good for calculations of energy and correlation functions in many body systems, if what you put is good enough or is flexible enough.
So, but yeah, but if you can't ignore that, it's going to be kind of tough.
Yes.
I have two questions. One is, in the regular Ising model, square lattice, the network you use, and there was a question about having one neuron or two neurons at the end. If you have one neuron, then it changes the architecture. In other words, in the last step, you have less weights, right?
Yeah.
So wouldn't you expect that would make a difference?
So,
or is there an inherent symmetry between these weights?
I don't know, but so in principle, you reduce you reduce marginally the number of parameters. So you could do that, but I think it won't give you a huge improvement or so it doesn't make a big difference. That's what I'm trying to say. And
so the second question is, if you train the network on a square lattice, but for the antiferromagnetic Ising model, and you take it to the triangular lattice, do you get always like unordered neuron activated?
No, so in that case, the problem is that for the square lattice, you have one phase, which is the antiferromagnetic state. But on the triangular, if you use, the ground state is completely different. It's like a correlated spin liquid, highly degenerate. And so the physics is too different. And since there's not even order parameter in the triangular. So and because this thing relies on the presence of an ordered parameter, then it will completely get confused.
Right. So I was wondering what you get if you tried that.
I think you will get that that for the triangular lattice you get only the, so it will classify all the states as high temperature. That's my guess. Mm-hmm. Because the ground state is disordered.
Any other questions?
Yeah, so this is a completely unfair question to end the session. So basically your classifier or your machine eats a spin configuration and spits out a classification. Is it this phase? Is it that phase?
That's exactly.
How far can you push this? I mean, in particular, there has been, for example, intense interest in condensed matter physics about whether particular models, Kagame lattice, Intuitive, et cetera, have a spin liquid ground state or an anti-ferromagnetic ground state.
Right.
And these distinctions are subtle and involve long range wavelength physics, but maybe, you know, this line of thinking can tease out subtle distinctions from random snapshots. So how far can you push this in that direction?
Yeah, so we had an idea about that. Or I had one idea about that, which is you could do the training using variational states that are, for instance, Z2 spin liquid. There are like a ton of classifications and ground states out of which you can sample, okay? And then there are other like wave functions which are magnetically ordered for which you can tune how much order you have and so on. So I can imagine using all this technology derived like since the 80s until now to produce like a large set out of which you could imagine doing that. Yeah. I don't know how accurate in the end this would turn out or how useful, but in principle you could imagine doing something like that.
So I'm not sure I understand what you would feed into the machine if you want to distinguish quantum phases, because I mean here you have classical configurations, right? And for a quantum phase, the phase relation between the classical configurations might be very important, right? Say you want to distinguish a toric code model phase from a double semion phase, right? I mean, they look completely identical in the classical basis, but they have different phase relations, right? So how would you feed this even into the machine?
Yeah, so one idea we have is to actually perform like a path integral type Monte Carlo, where you go to a d plus one dimensions, and then you can do this Monte Carlo machine learning idea and see if we can get a sense for what you're trying to say. And then I invite you to stay here for like a Peter's talk later. He will do some of that.
Okay, so it wouldn't be so much a snapshot of a configuration, but a snapshot of a Monte Carlo simulation in that case.
Basically. That's what we're thinking that we can
okay,
do.
Okay, all right, thanks.
Okay, with that, let's thank Juan.
Thank you.